Hello and welcome back to another edition of the Dog and Duck Show. My name is Warren Maynard. I am the dog. With me is Mark Schmoor. He is the duck. And boy, mixed results this past weekend. The Huskies lose on the road at the Rose Bowl. The Ducks win at home against Stanford. Mark, how are you doing, my friend?
Warren, I was going to say, we had the Mariners clinch a playoff spot. We had the Kraken win their first four games of the season. We had the Seahawks with a thrilling win over Detroit. I think, is this the greatest week in Seattle sports history? That's the question that I wanted to start off the show with.
You know, Mark, if this were the Mariner-Kraken-Seahawk show, then yes, maybe that would be true. But this is the Dog and the Duck show. And you know that if you cut me, I don't bleed teal and I don't bleed blue or green. I bleed purple. And boy, I was bleeding out on Friday night watching my Dogs go down against UCLA. And we're going to get into it. So let's just dive right in and talk about what we saw this weekend. And then we'll look ahead to this upcoming weekend's games. So, Mark, why don't we start with the Dogs? Because that, you know, that was probably the more compelling of the two games this weekend. Obviously, Oregon had their way with Stanford. There's not a whole lot of intrigue there, but the Dogs lose to UCLA in the Rose Bowl 40-32 on a Friday night. The crowd was not a factor for this game, a disappointing loss, and the defense in particular was exposed in a major way, mostly in the second and third quarter when the Huskies were outscored 31-9.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, Warren, we have not talked about this. The listeners should know this. We have not spoken to each other since that game.
We try not to talk to each other unless it's absolutely necessary.
Yeah, right? Exactly. So we, you know, we shared a few text messages, but I haven't gotten your full kind of, you know, breakdown of this. I'm curious to know, because you were optimistic going in. You thought the Huskies were the better team. You thought the Huskies were going to prevail. I predicted on this show that the Bruins were going to win a shootout. And I kind of was going back and forth on my score. I said on the show it would be in the low 40s. Then I texted you. I thought it would be in the low 30s. I kind of split the difference there. But I had a gut feeling that this was a good win for UCLA, potentially. I would say it was like 55% UCLA,
yeah,
45% Washington. At what point in this game, as it unfolded, did you kind of start to feel like we could be in trouble? Like, how early was it? Because I'm thinking in my mind there were a few different moments where it might have happened, and I'm just kind of curious if there was a point where it kind of turned for you where you were like, oh, we could really be in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, and I predicted the Huskies were going to win 41-31. They lost 40-32. So my numbers were pretty close, just a little bit inverted. But yeah, I think this was a game where, you know, we showed up, and as the Dogs have done every week this season, when they got the ball, they marched down the field and scored a touchdown on their first drive, which was very encouraging. The Bruins get the ball, they marched down the field, but I was feeling pretty good about the fact that although they weren't sacking DTR, they were getting pressure on him on that first drive. And as teams have done against Washington over the last few games, they were kind of miraculously converting third and fourth downs to get all the way down to the goal line. UCLA decides to go for it on fourth and goal,
right
from the 2 or 3 yard line. They don't get it. And so now Washington has the ball. They're up by 7.
Let me just chime in real quick, Warren. It's not just that they didn't get it on fourth and goal. It's that UCLA ran a series of plays in a goal-to-go situation that were totally disorganized. The fourth down play was, like, over before it started. I mean, they looked totally discombobulated. trying to punch in that touchdown. Anyway, I just wanted to point that out, that it wasn't like I mean, it kind of looked troubling for UCLA on that.
Well, and speaking of discombobulated, on the very next play, Washington does what I would consider to be a very reasonable and safe play. They do a pitch out to fifth year player, you know, the oldest guy on the team, Wayne Talapapa. He fumbles the ball, recovers it in the end zone for a safety. Now it's 7-2. And of course, at that moment, we're thinking, oh my goodness, we've, you know, really blown a great opportunity. We're going to have to put the defense back out on the field. We get a great kickoff after the safety, and UCLA is pinned back at their 7-yard line, and they just march down the field with the greatest of ease. And it was a mix, Mark, of not only wide receivers wide open, but missed tackles galore and penalties that just allowed UCLA to breeze right down the field and go up 9-7. This is the first time all year that the Huskies have not had a lead in the game. So, of course, at that moment, we're thinking, wow, we really screwed that up. But, you know, we're still in the driver's seat. Once we get in to a rhythm, we'll be back on track. Penix takes the ball down the field, stalls out. We kick a field goal. So we're up 10-9. And I think that was when the wheels really fell off. UCLA just continued to gash Washington, and on defense, like I said, wide open receivers, missed tackles, penalties. Washington on offense, UCLA changed their tactics, and they went to an overload strategy where Leatu Latu and the two Murphy brothers, who are kind of their three key pass rushers, those guys just crashed in on the Washington offensive line, giving Michael Penix Jr. the first pressure that he's seen this year. And so over the next few drives, Michael Penix gets sacked twice. The Husky offensive line gets four offensive holding penalties, putting them in a precarious position. And Michael Penix Jr. throws two interceptions. And in that second and third quarter, Washington is just buried by UCLA by a margin of 31-9. And so, you know, obviously at that moment, we're all, our heads are spinning. You know, my text thread is blowing up by my Husky friends that are just losing their minds, giving up all hope. You know, DTR, in my opinion, he played the game of his life. And I just want to emphasize this for those Husky fans that are maybe wondering, were we all wrong about this Husky team thus far? I just think this is important to acknowledge. Is it true that UCLA had perhaps underperformed in reaching a 4-0 record? I think it is. But what we saw on Friday night from the Bruins against the Huskies is what this UCLA team can be when they're firing on all cylinders. And I just want to highlight a few things. Mark, DTR, he is a 5-year starter. He has started all 5 years with Chip Kelly in this offense, with the same offensive system and coordinator. And it is coming together for him now in this fifth year in ways that we saw glimpses in previous years. He's putting it all together now. He passed for 315 yards, 3 touchdowns. He added 60 yards on the ground and an additional touchdown. Throw in Zach Charbonnet, who I believe is an NFL quality running back. He was a 5-star running back coming out of college, went to Michigan, transferred to UCLA. He ran for 124 yards and a touchdown. And then 6'5" wide receiver from Duke, also a 5-year starter.
Yeah.
Jake Bobo, he played his first 4 years at Duke, transferred over. He caught 6 passes for 142 yards and two touchdowns. You know, so you've got a trio there that I think could arguably, when we get to the end of the season, could arguably be the best trio in the Pac-12. I'm not saying that individually that they're the best, but as a trio, they may end up being the best, and they're certainly the most experienced trio in the Pac-12 without anybody coming anywhere close. So that, I think, when you put all of those things together, and then you add on the fact that the Huskies had 9 penalties for 150 yards, and at the end of the game, with 4 minutes left, we were 8 points away. All we needed was a stop, and we would have had an opportunity to tie up the game and go into overtime. I think for that reason, Husky fans should be encouraged that this team is not as far as perhaps we thought they were after the game was immediately over. Michael Penix still finished with 345 yards, 4 touchdowns, albeit 2 interceptions, 2 costly interceptions. But he really rallied in the second half. And I think that Washington offensive coaching staff, they figured out what they needed to do after the second quarter, when all of that pressure kind of overwhelmed Penix and he had those 2 interceptions. He played a lot better in the second half, and I think we should feel good about that moving forward.
Yeah, I think there's no reason to panic coming off a game like this. I think, you know, as I was kind of handicapping it ahead of time, what I was thinking about was USC is one of the best teams in the conference. Their conference opener on the road, they went to play Oregon State, who they are more talented than, and they pulled it out in the final minute of the game.
Yeah,
Washington or Oregon, I think, is one of the best teams in the conference. Their first road game in conference, they went up to Pullman. They're more talented than the Cougars. They had to pull that game out in the final 2 minutes kind of miraculously. And so I looked at that and I thought, well, the Huskies, I think, are in that same category with the Trojans and with the Ducks. And they're playing a UCLA team who I think is significantly more talented than the Beavers or the Cougars.
Yeah.
And so, and for a team like the Beavers or the Bruins that's kind of sleptwalked through the first month and not really been, you know, challenged in a big game, there's a lot that's going to go into this game preparation wise for UCLA. And so, yeah, for Washington fans, I don't think there needs to be an overreaction. I think anytime you're playing on the road on a weeknight, it seems like weird things just happen. You know, like we kind of texted that it didn't seem like the Huskies were the best version of themselves. They're making mistakes that we haven't seen them make the first month of the season. You know, sometimes that just kind of happens, especially on these random Thursday or Friday night games where you're not coming off a bye, so your whole preparation window has to be adapted. So yeah, I wouldn't be too discouraged. I did think there were certainly some signs in the second half that, you know, show the Huskies are still going to be a factor. And I think this was more about saying UCLA is to be considered with those teams right now as like a conference contender. We'll find out because they have to play Utah and Oregon in their next 2 games. So it may, you know, we may not think so in a couple weeks, but if you look at like what you said about the combination of DTR, Charbonnet and, you know, Bobo. Yeah. If that's your trio, like you're going to win a lot of games, you're going to cause teams a lot of problems. And Chip Kelly's run at UCLA has not been nearly as kind of overwhelmingly dominant as his run at Oregon.
Right.
His winning percentage has improved every year that he's been there.
Yeah.
And Chip Kelly was notorious even in his time at Oregon that he really didn't care for recruiting, didn't like that side of coaching. That's why he went to the NFL, because he'd rather just break down film the whole time. Well, he has excelled probably more than any coach in the country at utilizing the transfer portal. Which, for a guy like him who loves breaking down film, what's better than, hey, I found this running back at Michigan, we're going to bring him in. I found this wide receiver at Duke. I found this linebacker in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And he has stacked his roster with meaningful transfers that are coming in that are fourth and fifth year guys. And they're capable of playing at a really high level. And so I think this win was much more about what UCLA's ceiling is and how it's higher than we thought than any sort of kind of long-term concerns about the Huskies. They didn't play their best game. They have less of a margin of error now, but they're still going to be a factor in this thing.
I agree. And I think, you know, just real quick on Chip Kelly, you know, I think everybody expected that he was going to step in at UCLA with the abundance of talent right there in Los Angeles, and that he was going to just have his way. He didn't. He started out in his first season, he started out his first five games 0-5.
Yeah.
His second year, he started out 1-4. His third year, 3-2. His fourth year, 3-2. And now in his fifth year, with the same quarterback for all 5 years,
right?
He's starting out 5-0, and this is clearly the best UCLA team that Chip Kelly has put together thus far. And I'm not predicting that they're going to go undefeated or even that they'll win the Pac-12, but I think this is a UCLA team that can beat any team in the Pac-12 on a given Saturday, and they did it on a Friday night against the Huskies this past weekend. But, you know, we'll look ahead to Arizona State after we talk through the Oregon Stanford game. But just, you know, as a note, I think we have to acknowledge that there were some major weaknesses that were exposed in this game by the Huskies. Number one, the defensive backfield was just obliterated. And that's partly that's due in part to a lot of injuries in the backfield. There may be some scheme going on back there. It looked like these guys were not motivated to really tackle in the backfield. And I would think that that's going to be addressed. But in addition to that, we've seen this Husky team be exposed with the mobile quarterback. And what DTR brought to the table, I think why he was so really effective, was you've got a quarterback that knows how to pass and can run. And that's the first quarterback that we've seen like that on the schedule this year. One that's really adept at both passing and running. Tanner McKee, great passing quarterback, not a great running quarterback. And we had our way with him. Connor Schley from Kent State, really good on his feet, but he really didn't get anything done in the air. And you know, Peyton Thorne, 270 yards to the air, but really was not a threat on the ground at all. So I think that's going to be the real challenge for the Huskies. And looking ahead at the schedule, Mark, you know, I think the big struggle is going to be Bo Nix and Oregon, who, you know, Bo Nix runs for 165 yards against Stanford this past weekend. All of a sudden, you have to really have a game plan to stop him from running the ball. But other than him and maybe perhaps Cameron Ward, I don't see any other quarterback on the Huskies' remaining schedule that poses the kind of threat that DTR did to this Husky team on Friday night.
I think you're absolutely right. I think there are five offenses in the Pac-12 that average 40 or more points per game. One of them is Washington's. One of them is UCLA, who they just played. Two of them are USC and Utah, who they do not have to play in the regular season. And then the last one would be Oregon. And Oregon has been pretty balanced, but is, I would say, more run heavy than certainly downfield passing. They might, you know, try to pick you apart with a lot of 7 to 10 yard plays, but they're not necessarily, you know, going to make those third and long completions on a regular basis like UCLA was. So I think you're right. I think they just played probably the best offensive skill set guys they're going to play in the regular season. Like you said, they probably have one other game of that caliber left. That doesn't mean that somebody like Jaden Delora won't give them some problems or something like that, you know, if things break a different way. But in terms of the heavy hitters, they just played one of probably the two best teams that they're going to play all season.
Absolutely. Well, Mark, give us a breakdown on what you saw from this Oregon Duck team against Stanford. Washington just played Stanford had their way with them. So did Oregon. Any takeaways from this game that really stood out to you?
Yeah, I think it's funny, Warren. I kind of sat back and looked at kind of a bigger picture view of this team after this game and thought, I'm actually really excited about the trajectory that I'm seeing with this team. Oregon had a really lackluster first quarter, had some really just dumb penalties that cost them on a few different drives. And it was a 3-3 game until the final play of the first quarter, when Oregon basically hurried to the line and ran a play as the clock was ticking down. It looked like the clock actually hit zero, to be honest. But they ran a screen pass to Chase Cota, who took it 50 yards for a touchdown. Oregon went up 10-3 at that point. They finished the half up 31-3. So they just put a run on Stanford in that second quarter that just completely took them out of the game. It was pretty much garbage time the whole second half. And what I was thinking about, Warren, is it's been a while for Oregon fans to see kind of that kind of just a frenetic run that the Oregon put on Stanford. And we saw it, you know, the previous week against the Cougars when they scored like 21 points in 3 minutes or something like that. The thing about the kind of the peak Oregon days under Chip Kelly is Oregon kind of felt like a basketball team at times. They felt like they would go on these runs where it's like Oregon just went on a 28-3 run in 4.5 minutes. And they would take a game that was pretty in doubt and pretty in question, and they would just end it in like a 4 or 5 minute stretch. And Oregon hasn't really had that kind of a team. Even you know, the best team since then was the Justin Herbert Rose Bowl team. That team didn't just, you know, put these runs on teams mm-hmm. in the same fashion. And now in back-to-back weeks, Oregon has kind of showed some glimpses of that. I'm not comparing this team to, you know, the peak of the Chip Kelly era quite yet, but I would say that, you know, Oregon has scored 40-plus points in 4 straight games, 3 of those against major conference opponents, and you'd have to go back to, like, the Marcus Mariota era to find an Oregon offense performing at that level. They're averaging more than right now, despite scoring 3 points in their first game, they're averaging more points than an Oregon team has averaged for the last 7 or 8 years. So I find myself kind of going like, this is coming together, at least on the offensive side of the ball, a little quicker than I anticipated coming into the season. Defense, that's a different question.
Yeah. And, well, tell me about the defense. I mean, you know, Stanford put up 27. Was that a quality 27? Was that a cheap 27?
No, I mean, it was, like I said, it was 31-3 at halftime. And so actually I would say the first half was the best defensive half that we've seen from Oregon thus far. Because Stanford does have, they've got a couple receivers. They've got an NFL caliber quarterback. They've, you know, they've got a running back from Oregon, from Lake Oswego, who did pretty well. And so to hold them to 3 points in the half and just kind of take the wind out of their sails, you know, Stanford did score some in the second half. I want to say it was 45-13 or 45-17 when Oregon just kind of called off the dogs. And so Stanford mm-hmm. did get a couple scores late that just kind of felt like, you know, garbage time touchdowns, which is what Stanford did against Washington and against USC for similar final scores. So that wasn't really surprising. But I would say that as enthusiastic as I am about the Oregon offense, I'm more kind of cautiously optimistic about the Oregon defense. I think they're getting better. They're not making some of the same errors that they were making, you know, in the season opener against Georgia. They actually played really well at the beginning of the game against BYU and against Stanford. You know, the Wazoo game was not as much of a bright spot. They gave up 41 points in that game. But I think the defense still definitely has a ways to go to really, you know, be considered. Like, I rattled off that Oregon's averaging 40 points a game. They're kind of one of the elite offenses in the Pac-12. I wouldn't put Oregon's defense anywhere near the elite defenses of the Pac-12. You know, I don't know who is it Utah that has the best defense in the Pac-12? Probably. Or Oregon's not anywhere near that caliber right now. And I'm not sure they're going to get there this season. But there's some progress to be made.
All right, well, Mark, let's look ahead at this upcoming weekend. Both Washington and Oregon are traveling to Arizona. Let's talk a little bit about Oregon's game against Arizona first. This is an Arizona team that maybe started out a little bit better than we thought that they might, but the last couple of weeks have kind of shown that maybe there's really not a lot to be worried about. How concerned are you about the Ducks going into the desert to play Arizona this weekend?
Well, I would say there are two things that have me a little bit concerned. And I, as you'll notice, Warren, I find reasons to be concerned. I was worried about going up to Pullman, rightfully so.
Yeah.
You know, I was worried about our history with Stanford. As far as Arizona goes, Oregon has not won in Tucson since 2011. Really? Mark Helfrich lost in Tucson with Marcus Mariota as his quarterback. Mario Cristobal lost in Tucson with Justin Herbert as his quarterback. Like, there is a history of Oregon struggling in the desert against Arizona teams that frankly weren't very good. So I do have some reservations, I think, specifically about this Arizona team. They've got a couple receivers that can really play. Dan Lanning said he thought that Arizona's receivers, Jacob Cowling and Dorian Singer and Tanner McLaughlin, I'm going to screw up this name, Tetreo McMillan, who was an Oregon recruit that eventually went to Arizona, you know, that it's probably the best receiving core that Oregon has played, especially when you consider that when Oregon played BYU, they were without their two best receivers. You know, as good as Cam Ward was for the Cougars, I don't think they had, you know, a depth at receiver that kind of intimidated you to the same degree. But Arizona has dudes out there, you know, maybe not quite to the same caliber that Washington does. I still think Washington's probably got the best, you know, group of receivers in the conference, but Arizona's got enough difference makers that and a good enough quarterback in Jaden McClora that it could get interesting, you know. And pass defense is by far the biggest concern for the Oregon defense. They were much better against Tanner McKee and those physical Stanford receivers than they had been against Cam Ward or against Jaren Hall or some of the other quarterbacks they played. So, I have some reservations. I mean, I think Oregon's going to win? Would I put a prediction on it? Sure. Like, but I wouldn't say that I'm without any sort of nervous energy.
So, you know, from what you've seen from Jaden Delora, do you think that this is a guy that is trending in the right direction right now, or you know, has he kind of lost that zip?
Well, I have not watched Arizona particularly closely this year. I saw Jaden Delora last year when he played against the Ducks, and the Ducks handled him pretty well. So I'm not necessarily intimidated by playing Jaden Delora. I think he's a functional Pac-12 quarterback. You know, he's decent. I think it's more a question of how good is the Oregon pass defense, and can they make Jaden Delora look maybe a little better than he is, just because they haven't figured out some things at the back end. I'm feeling a little better about that question after the way they played against Stanford, but I think until I see them, you know, put together two or three games in a row like that, that's still going to be kind of a lingering question for me.
Got it. Well, similarly, the Huskies are going into a game against Arizona State. And, you know, on paper, this looks like a game that the Huskies should win without any real trouble. But that being said, the last time the Huskies won in Tempe Mark, was 2001.
Oh my goodness.
So you can't take anything for granted when you go out to the desert. And I think that's going to be another big time challenge for this Husky team. But that being said, this is an Arizona State team that's 1-4. They just got, maybe they played their best half of the season in the first half against USC, but got beat down against USC. Obviously, the program right now is in shambles with the dismissal of Herm Edwards, and it's just not a very good football team.
Yeah.
So, you know, looking at this Arizona State defense, you know, they're giving up 28.6 points per game, which is 89th in Division One. They're giving up 173 rushing yards per game, which is really low in the nation. And even through the air, they're only ranked 66th with 225 yards. So this is a defense that I think Michael Penix and crew are not going to really have any real trouble with. That being said, it's the desert. Anything can happen in the desert. There's a reason why they haven't won there since 2001. It's a 1 o'clock game time, so it's going to be very hot in Tempe, and that'll obviously work against the Huskies. But I think this is a game that Coach DeBoer and these players know they have to win. And Emory Jones has not really done anything this year to make me think that he's going to rise up and have a career game against this Huskies team. They are going to have to shore up some of their issues. I think those will potentially be more so exposed against Jaden Delora and those wide receivers when they face Arizona in 2 weeks. But I may be just, you know, completely deluded, but I think this is a game that the Huskies should be able to handle fairly easily.
Yeah, I think there's good reason to think that. I mean, Arizona State's only win is Northern Arizona in their season opener. They lost to Eastern Michigan, and they've played three, you know, really good teams, Oklahoma State, Utah, and USC, and they lost by 17, 21, and 17 points in those three games. And yeah. So if Washington is roughly of the caliber of those teams, then that's kind of the ballpark that I would expect. I would expect like a 35-17 type game. I think just given where Arizona State's at, and unless somehow under an interim coach, you know, sometimes you do see a team kind of rally the troops a little bit.
Yeah.
And
I was just thinking that.
But I think that's more likely to come. Like, so after they play Washington, they play Stanford and Colorado, then they get UCLA at home, and then they play Wazoo, the Beavers, in Arizona. That's a stretch where I could see them maybe put something together, and maybe they go, you know, 5-1 in the second half of the season or something. If you're going to talk me into kind of the interim coach effect, kind of building this team together, I don't know that it starts this week against the Huskies coming off a loss when the Huskies are going to be, you know, playing with their hair on fire a little bit.
I agree. All right. Well, Mark, anything that you know, stood out to you from the rest of the Pac-12 slate that you think needs to be discussed before we wrap things up tonight?
Just the one game I would spotlight would be Washington, you know, taking a pretty close game against Cal and then pulling away and winning by about three touchdowns. Washington State, the Cougars.
Right.
You know, we talked about that. That was a big game for them coming off of the loss to the Ducks, to see how they responded and can they kind of keep themselves alive for the time being in you know, divisional race and things like that. So I was really impressed with the Cougars. And I think looking ahead to this next week, I'm very, very interested to see how UCLA follows up their win against the Huskies by hosting Utah. the team that I think we all kind of agree is probably the best team in the conference, but is the team that hasn't really gotten that marquee win yet because they lost their season opener at Florida, and then their schedule hasn't really forced them to play another, you know, team of the same caliber. So we're still, I think, kind of waiting to see Utah, you know, put it all together the way that we think they're capable of. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they do in the Rose Bowl after, you know, UCLA just took care of the Huskies there.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, speaking of Washington State, if you're a Cougar, you've got to be a little bit irked by the fact that, you know, you're still not ranked in the top 25. They are number one in the others receiving votes with 91 at 4-1. But the Pac-12, for the first time in a while, has five teams in the top 25 right now. USC at number six, Utah at 11, Oregon at 12, UCLA at 18, Washington at 21. And then, like I mentioned, Washington State right outside of the top 25, essentially number 26 in the nation. So I think it's a good sign for the Pac-12, but it's also a great reminder that, you know, getting out of the Pac-12 unscathed is not going to be an easy task this year for any of these teams, whether it's Utah, USC, Oregon, Washington, UCLA. This is going to be a difficult year to make it out of the Pac-12, and it's difficult almost every year. So,
well, to your point, I circled Utah and UCLA as the game of the week, which I think it is, but Washington State goes down to the Coliseum and is at USC, which is a really huge game for the Cougars, you know, to try to kind of stay alive in this thing, to go down there and play in the Coliseum. So a couple interesting games not involving Northwest schools traveling to Arizona, which is where our attention will be focused, but lots of other good action in the Pac-12 this week as well.
And I guess, Mark, you know, we haven't really talked about this, but are you cheering for the teams that are remaining in the Pac-12, or do you have your one foot out the door and you're cheering for these Los Angeles teams to beat? Like, would you want to see UCLA beat Utah or Utah beat UCLA? Would you rather see Washington State beat USC or vice versa?
I kind of talk myself into any outcome, because there's a sense in which, okay, I would love for UCLA to have as high of a ranking as they can right now. But if they lose to Utah, then there's part of me that's like, oh, I would love to see Utah come into Autzen and be 9-1 when Oregon plays them. You know, there was a part of me that wanted to see the Huskies come in undefeated. You know, but if Utah loses to USC and UCLA loses to USC, then my hope would be, well, I hope Oregon could play the Pac-12 championship against an undefeated USC. Wouldn't that be fun? So I just kind of, I don't necessarily, you know, I'm not actively rooting for like some certain scenario that I think will work out in Oregon's favor. I just kind of figure it's all going to shake out in a way that there's going to be some matchups that kind of get highlighted. So I think that Oregon's game against UCLA in 2 weeks is now more highlighted than it was because of what they did against Washington. If they beat Utah, then it becomes like, oh my gosh, this might be the most important game of the season. You know, so I just kind of talk myself into whatever outcome transpires.
Yeah. I think for me right now, my heart is still with the Pac-12 or what may eventually be the Pac-10 again. I don't want to see USC or UCLA thrive with them leaving the Pac-12. I would much rather see Utah overcome USC as the top team in the South. I would rather see Washington State embarrass USC. I would rather, you know, those teams become an afterthought, and people are saying, you know, the best teams in the Pac-12 are really Washington, Oregon, Utah, and so on and so forth. But that may be pie in the sky thinking. And then, of course, we might find out next month that Washington and Oregon are leaving the Pac-12. So who knows? But that's where I'm landing right now. I want to stay a Pac-12 apologist until somebody tells me that I have to change.
That's fair. And I definitely root against USC anytime they're on the screen. It doesn't matter the opponent.
What about if they're playing Notre Dame? Like, do you want the Pac-12 to be strong in that regard?
Well, I was more thinking against any other Pac-12 team.
Yeah. Okay.
USC to lose. If they're playing Notre Dame, I kind of want both teams to lose.
Yeah. You know? A tie. Yeah.
Yeah. UCLA is different for me. For one, they don't have the history that USC has recently. Right. They haven't been nearly as dominant, so that's not built in. But also, I still have a soft spot in my heart for Chip Kelly.
Yeah.
For what he did for the University of Oregon. I think all Oregon fans still kind of love Chip. And so I don't want to see him just kind of crash and burn at UCLA like it looked like he might in year one and year two. So right. I kind of like that he's finding himself again after really struggling in his last couple of years in the NFL. So, you know, with that said, when UCLA is playing Utah, I'm not going to be like, you know, pacing around rooting for the Bruins. I think I'll lean towards UCLA, but if Utah prevails, I'm not going to be heartbroken about it.
Yeah, I got it. Well, those should be good games this weekend. Hopefully our games are not really that much to get excited about. Hopefully they're blowouts, and we'll be looking at 5-1 for each of our teams coming into next week's show. But with that, let's go ahead and wrap it up. Thank you everybody for listening. Dogs, keep your head up. By the way, you don't need to apply for the defensive coordinator position at the University of Washington. They are going to get this figured out. They don't need your help. So you can save all that for Twitter, but thank you everybody for listening. For all my dogs out there, go Dogs.
And for all my Duck fans, go Ducks.
Catch you next time.